So please help me give a warm welcome to our speaker tonight, Grace from the Moyock Mayflower Home Group.
Big Book Study.
Big Book Study.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's okay. I always have to think, what's the name of it? I don't know why. I can't even remember the names of my own home group. Well, there's more than four people. That's good. Thank you. I'm going to check my time here. I'm Grace. I'm an alcoholic. I have no preparation for any of this. I tried not to overthink it. I'm sure I will when I'm done. Thank you to Steve for having the meeting. And thank you to a gentleman named Shane who asked me to speak. He's not here, but thank you. And thank you, Mike, for confirming it, because it's possible that I could forget. And then you don't know who you're going to get. Again, my name's Grace. I'm an alcoholic, and I have a sobriety date. It's August 31, 2011. God willing, and the creek don't rise, it'll be 15 years. And that's a bloody miracle. I had a really good day today. That's thanks to sobriety. My husband and I just came from a nice dinner, and the man that I met in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and my dad, my picker's gotten much better. And I have a great life today. We have a great life. You know, it's a miracle. When I rolled in these rooms, I wasn't young. I don't have a lot of white chips. I have one. It doesn't make me better or worse or anything. I did all of my experimenting outside. And by the time I was driven to Alcoholics Anonymous by my alcoholism, I was beaten into a state of reasonableness. And they handed me a big book in this rehab that I was placed in by my family off of a suicide attempt. And it was the first time I'd seen the big book. I celebrated my 52nd birthday in that rehab. And it's the first time when I looked in the mirror in that little room all by myself with two little twin beds, and I saw what everybody else had seen. And that was my moment of clarity, and it was shocking. It was shocking. I'm born and raised in the north end of Virginia Beach. I came from a nice upscale family, a private school education, rode horses all my life. I have nothing. I don't have a horror story like that. What I do know is I picked up my first drink at age 12, and it fixed everything. Fixed everything. I suffered from alcoholism long before I drank. I know that today because you guys taught me about what alcoholism is. It's the ism part that kicks me in the butt. It's the ism that I drink over. It's that part of me that I don't feel comfortable. I'm scared. I'm scared all the time. I was scared, like I said, as a little kid. And so at age 12, when I found that it was a bottle of Annie Green Springs wine and a boy named Nick up behind Galilee Church for a church dance, and everything went, and I drank it all, puked my guts out, and couldn't wait to do it again. And I did. I come from a family of hard drinkers. They are not low bottoms, trust me. But alcohol was always prevalent, and it was acceptable. But, you know, I used to say, you know, they're all a bunch of alcoholics. I'm the only person who gets to call me an alcoholic. They seem to be able to function when they do. I don't. So, you know, I never could pull it off. I'm not a functioning alcoholic. When I drink it all. If I took a drink today, I guarantee you within 30 days I'd be homeless again. That's just how I drink. But at any rate, you read the more about alcoholism part, and I love that because it talks about how I can never drink safely. And I had years and years and years and years of trying to change, stop, alter, somehow to get a different outcome from what happens when I put a drink in me. So lots of car accidents, lots of trouble, lots of, you know, the drunkalogue is long. It could be funny, and I could portray it that way, but the truth is it got me right where I am. Today it's great, and I'm grateful for it, but I can tell you, when I rolled up in that rehab, sometime, it was August 31, I don't really know when my last drink was, because I'm a blackout drinker, and when I rolled up in there on that day, my life was bad. I had given away 4 children, I had given away a career, 2 trust funds, and every relationship I'd ever had. And it was between me and the straight edge of the pink lady chick racer. That was my best, that's where I wound up. In 1987, I go back that far because, again, this thing that I, trying to control my drinking, something really bad happened, you know, like, I don't know about you guys, that's when I always say I'm never going to drink again. I wrecked my car, ran my car with my brand new baby in the front seat through a red light and hit 5 other people. And it was bad. He did not die, nobody died, but they were badly hurt. And I was arrested and sent to jail. Child was taken and I was done drinking. That was in 1987. And I owned alcoholism. I told people I'm an alcoholic. Nothing directed me into Alcoholics Anonymous. I never saw a big book, but I stopped drinking. Put the booze down. And I was done. If you'd have given me a lie detector test, I'd have passed it. And I did not pick up another drink for almost 15 years. Now, I'll tell you, I did practice the marijuana maintenance program. I was living in Southwest Florida. I'm a great botanist, if you get my drift. I like to grow things. And I had a husband and we were making babies and my isms were alive and well, and you know, as soon as one child would go down for a nap, I would be getting that ease and comfort. But I wasn't drinking or doing anything else. I did dabble in some other dry goods. I'm a child of the 70s, gotta be honest about that. But it didn't require a 12-step program or a spiritual awakening to give up the other stuff. The threat of prison is all that took that. And I was done. But alcohol was always my go-to. But again, in 87, something really bad happened and I put the booze down. Walked away from it. Meanwhile, life kept getting lifey and I kept smoking more and more weed and burning up relationships. And we moved back up here and my marriage fell apart, and it wasn't very long before this idea came to my head after all those years and all that horror that had happened those years before. I thought, I can have a drink. It'll be different this time. Now, I didn't tell anybody that's what I was thinking. I certainly didn't tell the husband that was still around, who was there when I wrecked the car and almost killed his child. I just made my plans. I went to the party I was planning on and walked directly to the bar and got a glass of wine, and it was on. It was on, and it was on for another 10 years, and I burned down every single thing that I had obtained in my life. And wound up in that rehab in 2011, looking at this woman in the mirror, and I didn't know who it was. I had no idea. And not only was everybody else mad at me, I couldn't stand myself. And booze didn't work. Here was what really got me. I didn't want to drink. I couldn't not drink. When I put down the booze in 1987, and I didn't realize it at the time, of course, because I didn't understand what alcoholism was all about. I found that out here when one alcoholic talked to me and told me their experience, and I went, oh my God. But here's what the difference in those years were. When I put it down in 87, I had never yet experienced the I have to drink. I may have wanted it, I may have needed it, but I was still making some choices. And when I hit my bottom in 2011, I couldn't not drink. I could not not drink. I had to literally be removed from, I had to be locked up to stay away from it. Because I would lie, cheat, steal, give my kids away. I was so powerless over alcohol that, I knew that no matter what I did, I would always drink again. So when I was introduced to the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I, at first it was a great sedative, because when I got there, you know, they took my phone, the wooden TV, I had this little twin bed in this room with this stranger, and I hadn't slept in years. I don't know about you guys, alcohol had, I just passed out and came to. I drank every waking moment for years. And so insomnia, I called it insomnia. It's detoxing, that's what it is. Every 2 hours I need more booze, so I'm waking up. But anyway, they said, sorry, I don't know what to tell you, because they weren't giving me drugs, but the Big Book put me to sleep. I would lay in that bed, in that room, and just read those frickin', that was all I had. And I'd sleep, but eventually, it didn't take long, I started hearing the way I thought, the things I'd done in those pages, and I couldn't wait. And I'm so blessed to have been in the rehab I found myself in. I had nothing to do with it, because it was all about Big Book. Alcoholics Anonymous is not affiliated with any rehabs or anything, but this one was a 12-step program, and they were all about where our 12 steps come from, which is Alcoholics Anonymous. And so it was 8 hours a day of Big Book studies, whether I liked it or not. There was no leaving. My little brother dropped me off with a carton of cigarettes and $20 and said, we'll see your ass in 30 days. Don't call, don't write, you know, go away. Highly offended, but, you know, I'd driven them crazy. At least they knew where I was. And I couldn't leave. I believed that I wasn't allowed to leave. Now, I found out later, you know, I had no idea how that place was being paid for. Found out later it was my blessed mother that I was so angry at. Anyway, that have to drink thing, that obsession that they talk about, which I obsess over anything. I have good news and I have bad news. It's not only alcohol that I obsess over. You let me get a thought, ask my husband, you know, and it's on. Thank God for the rest of the 12 steps. Anyway, I left there and I wanted what they had. I remember the first time I saw the 12 steps on the wall in that little counselor's office. And I thought, this sounds so corny. It like lit up. And I read steps 1 through 12. And I thought, oh my God, it looks like the way out. This looks like the way out. It, every point I could ping off of really quickly and think, oh my Lord, this is the way I can live so that maybe I won't ever have to drink again. Now that's a very condensed version of what it's actually like to practice this design of living. And maybe God was just, you know, messing with me. But it hooked me enough that I was all in. So I was getting ready to leave there, and I was a little panicky because, again, I had wrecked my life. I was homeless, unemployable. What was I going to do when I leave here, right? And they said, girl, you need to get a sponsor. There's four things. This is all you need to focus on. You get a sponsor. You go to meetings every single day. First, don't drink, of course. Don't drink. Get a sponsor, join a home group, and get busy in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so my brother came back to pick me up, take me back to Chesapeake. I hit the streets running. I got out on a Thursday night. Friday night, I was in a meeting. The following week, I had a sponsor, and I got a home group. And out of those four things, one day at a time, I have this life. Like I said, today I woke up and I'm like, I can't believe the way my life looks like today. It almost feels like bragging. I will tell you, there's been a lot. There's been ups and downs in it. The first year didn't suck, but I needed a lot of help. My poor first sponsor, I've had two in these years, And my first sponsor, she was not, she wasn't a God girl. She wasn't about religion. She was about, this is a program of action. This is a program of action. She said things to me like, get a job. I said, well, how do I do that? And she told me. I mean, I didn't know how to do anything. My idea of getting valid car insurance was to get some guy I know to let me sign my card, the title over to him, and see if he can. I mean, this is how my brain worked. This was the way I'd been living. I needed help. That first step where it says, you know, you're powerless over alcohol and my life is unmanageable. Well, check, check, check. But I was powerless over everything. And my life, I could not manage with or without a drink. And my sponsor is who helped me. Is who helped me. That second step, that's the key. Ask for help. Ask for help. Whether I understood what I was doing or not, that's what happened. I kept asking for help. I tell people it felt like I had been naked at the mall. Everybody knew in Great Bridge Grace was a drunk. People at the grocery store, the mailman, neighbors, my children's parents, everybody knew I was a drunk. I was the last to find out, by the way. I was the last. I mean, when you're walking around, what's now used to be Farm Fresh, and I'm in my pajamas and slippers stealing wine, and I've walked up there. I'm not getting PTA Mom of the Year award, but I'm showing up to the PTA like that. It's a different picture today. But I was the last to find out. I was the last. So I needed a lot of help. When I got home, I say I was homeless, unemployable. In 2010, I got sober in 2011. My children's father that I had gotten rid of because he was coming between me and my booze. He knew I shouldn't drink. He knew when I started drinking in whatever year that was, 2001 or two again. It wasn't going to end well, and I got rid of him. I said I want a divorce, and in 2010 he killed himself, homeless in Asheville, North Carolina. And my kids, you know, that's a tough conversation to have to wake up to with your glass of vodka in hand and go tell your kids that your dad's dead, killed himself. And then a year later, their mother was trying to kill herself. And then they got 10 years of me running around Great Bridge in my underwear, you know, beg, borrowing, and stealing. And I gave them away. And then I come back. My point to that is I was homeless and unemployable, but because of his death, I had a little bit of income. It's what they call survivor benefits from Social Security. You're married to someone long enough. Wasn't much. I had a 20-year-old three-quarter ton Suburban that got about 8 miles to a gallon, which we lived in on occasion that first few months of my sobriety, with my little Chihuahua, Bruiser, who we just lost a year ago. Monday it'll be a year. He was 17 when he died. I got him, you are going to get some drunk-a-log funny stories. I came to one morning. And with my vodka in hand. And I looked at it, I said, I'm going to get a Chihuahua. And went in my pajamas, I'm sure, to the mall. And my father had passed away. So at some point, I inherited some money, enough to almost kill me. And so I, you know, the little mall vet stores, little pet store, yeah. They wanted like $1,200 for him. My keen negotiating skills got him down to $9, and walked out with this little Chihuahua. Came home and I just about killed him. He was 3 years old when I got sober. He just passed a year ago. I gave him away too, but he came back. My brother brought him back quick. Apparently he'd been pissing on everything in his house while I was gone. God is good. No mistakes in God's world. And so So when I hit the streets, I had this little bit of money. We, two of the four kids were waiting for me because they'd been like spinning around, waiting for me to get out of rehab so they wouldn't have to be trying to feed themselves. And I took up residence in a hotel. I don't know if y'all are familiar with it. It's right there at the corner of, anyway, you can't pay by the hour there. That's all I'll say. And it's flighty, you know what I mean? There's people coming and going. There's ladies walking around. There's a lot of selling of illegal things going on. And we weren't supposed to have, you couldn't have pets, but I had my dog, and we had a cat, which we very quickly were asked to leave because I was, again, breaking the rules again. My best idea is I don't understand what honesty is still yet. I do today. So we lived in this suburban for a while, and then, you know, I started working on these relationships with my sponsor, with the help of my sponsor. And I'm plowing through the steps. I'm plowing through these steps. There's somewhere in my mind, I don't know who said it. I don't know if anybody said it. What I heard was it's about a step a month. Because, you know, they make a big deal over this one-year chip thing in AA. I don't know if y'all have noticed this yet. And so I'm putting two and two together, and I'm thinking, because they'll say shit like, pardon my French, I'm not supposed to cuss, I'm sorry. They'll say, you know, those of you with a year or more, raise your hand. You get these people, raise their hand. And then they'll say, and those who wish to sponsor, keep them up or raise them. Well, I'm thinking, okay, it must be about a year that it takes to be able to sponsor. And then I'm thinking it must be about a year to take the 12 steps. So about one a month. Makes sense, right? Don't pay any attention to it. But that's what I'm thinking was happening at the time. So I'm plowing on through. I got sober in end of August, 1st of September, and here I am and plowing through, and it's working out well. And so I'm getting up to, now I think I'm being honest again. Liar, cheat, thief. This is how I roll in here. And I have 50 years of it. Pretty good at it. And but I'm telling my sponsor everything that I think is important. Notice I say that. And I don't know that I neglected. It just hadn't happened yet. So I had this issue with the mailbox. I don't know about y'all, but things like bills come in the mail. And, you know, trouble. Usually they'll send you letters. Well, I have a lifetime of, this is what I do with notices. They go in a box by the door. They just go in a box. And then about every 2 years, I either burn it or file bankruptcy. That's how I handle my life. And I've been doing this for decades. So the IRS has been sending me notices for quite a while. And years, basically. They kept going in this box. And then occasionally, I stopped going to mailboxes because that's a problem. I just don't go to the mailbox. It got so bad at one point, the mailman put a notice on the door. You have to go to the post office because we can't get any more mail in there. I'm like, oh, well, you know, I didn't get that notice. Maybe they'll send it back. Maybe they'll burn it. Let's move on. Anyway, I'm moving through the steps, and then I'm getting brave, or maybe I'm getting some foundation with my higher power, which might be happening. But I might have mentioned to her this issue I have with mailboxes. And see, I didn't tell you guys either. I happened to have moved in across the street from my sponsor. And the mailbox was actually in front of her place. So she could watch me go into the freaking mailbox. So I'm going now because I want to look good. I want her to think I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And I'm getting these notices from the IRS. Shit. Now, these 10 years of my drinking that I've been doing, I was a pretty successful real estate agent for some of those. But I had neglected to file taxes. And so, and I just don't look at my mail because I think I know what's in it. See, I'm also part-time psychic, so I'm just not going to look. Well, I start to open the mail, and there's some pretty hefty numbers in there. Pretty hefty. And I probably had an idea, it kept me drunk a long time, I'll put it to you that way. So finally, I come clean with my sponsor, and I'm like, you know, I told you I had some financial issues. And because we were just now approaching step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing. Now, I didn't mention it on the fourth step, trust me. I had no resentments when I wrote my fourth step, none. I was the quintessential victim. I told a great story, and I was the star. And we moved right along. But here we are, I'm writing this list, and I opened the mail, and I'm getting notices from the IRS, and I said, Lauren, you know, I tell her the first one, and she's like, what? I said, yeah, it's bad. She said, what are you going to do? I have no idea. I don't have a job. I don't own a house. I have a 20-year-old vehicle. I'm broke. There's no money. And we're laughing. We're sitting in her car, and we're laughing. And within about a week or 2 weeks, I kept getting these notes. Anyway, by the time the last one came, and I say this number just so you know how good God is, my higher power, because I was ready to hear this now. I was ready to look this fear thing that had just controlled my very being, my whole life, way before I picked up booze, fear. I was now, these steps were working. Those things I saw on the wall when I was in that rehab, and I thought, this could work. This is the way out. I can do this. It was freaking working. Because I could open it. When I opened that last one, just so you know, it had totaled $250,000 I owed the IRS. That's a quarter of $1 million. And we're laughing. I'm like, what the hell? Come get me. At least I get 3 hots in a cot. That's literally what I said. And I meant it. She goes, I said, what do I do? And I asked her. I didn't try and figure it out myself anymore. I was no longer managing my own life. Now, I didn't consciously, but that's what was happening through these steps. And she said, y'all probably already know what the answer is. I was waiting for one, by the way. She said, you need to call them. And I went, okay. And I started this process fearlessly. If you think that's part of 8 where it says, and became willing, isn't important. Those lists are great. That second half was the key. And it was right on time. And it was God's time. And I just started doing it. I sat on hold. Oh, my Lord. I burned up batteries on the beloved cell phone. I'd have to stay plugged into the wall waiting on hold. And everybody I called, I would tell them, oh, I'm an alcoholic. I'm so getting sober. I do all of, honey, I'm using it all. And invariably, someone on the other end would say, oh, God bless you. My father was an Alcoholics Anonymous, and he died 20 years sober. I mean, if you think that my creator isn't all over the shit, sorry, doing it again. And I just kept doing it, and I wasn't afraid. And finally, I'm checking all the bottom, waiting. It's a waiting game. You talk about practicing patience and tolerance. Oh, my word. And then they said, you know, I said, what do we do? And, of course, I'm getting lots of input from other people because I'm telling everybody in the meetings what's going on because clearly I'm a talker. Getting lots of, you know, not afraid. And I get this, finally it's coming through. And they said, okay, so I do a thing of what I have. I'm learning how to tell the truth. I tell the truth, right? I think I was working somewhere making minimum wage, whatever that, $7.25 an hour. I might have been working in a daycare center. Anyway, I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to have to get on the payment plan. I'm okay. You know, my mother, my albatross around my neck was now my new best friend. And I get the lady, and I do the budget, and I said, so how much am I going to have to pay y'all? And she says, oh, baby, No. You don't make enough to pay us. What are you going to take? Nothing. You just keep doing what you're doing. And she said, and we normally don't tell people this, but this falls away after so many years. You just keep us apprised of your financial situation. We place a lien for 7 years, and you're done. And I went, what? So these steps, here I am. I'm somewhere in that first year, and all those things that I had wrecked were like, and I'm good with it. I'm working these steps, and I get through 9, and 9 has been, still doing it. Steve talked last week. I came, a sponsee of mine was the speaker, and he filled in some time at the end. He was talking about the 9th step, and I'm still doing it, because, you know, those financial things that kept me drunk for so long, kept me so... such a slave. Booze was bad enough, but that shit just, it was bad. The financial, though, was actually the easy part. As scary as that sounds, it was actually the easy part. My children still having to, you know, there's consequences to the kind of drunk I am. There's consequences. And there's no amount of words that fix it. And there's no, I can't buy my way out of it. And I can't beg my way out of it. And some things I have had to accept. I've had to accept it. And I can't, and I just because I accept it today doesn't mean tomorrow I'm not going to be disturbed by it. So I still have to work this stuff. My mom, you heard me talk about my mother. She was my toughest relationship and my very best teacher. My father had passed away 10 years before my mother did. She died in 2017. And I was, about 6 years sober. And but my dad died in 2008, and there wasn't enough vodka on the planet. I drank it all. I drank it all. And I made that whole thing all about me, and I was the spectacle that everybody, I was the one they were having to carry up, sniveling and shit-faced at the funeral. With my mother so angry, she slapped me in the face. Sitting in the limo on the way to the grave with my dad. Never, you know. All 5 feet of her. Feisty little thing. I never could fool my mother. And so I was mad at her. And she was here. And that who paid for cash, because I had no health insurance, who paid for that rehab? It was my mother. And she never told me. Because if I'd have known it, I wouldn't have gone. And I had every single day of sobriety to be the kind of daughter I wanted to be, and to change a lifetime of toxicity. I called her every single night after I left a meeting, and I would piss and moan about it. I'd have all the girls, you know, because I have a lot of friends in AA, and I went to meetings every night, and we would go out to dinner. We'd all pile in the car, and I'd say, shh, I gotta call Mom. And I'd call my mother, my grown-ass self, you know, every single night. Once a month, I would go down to the house, and I'd spend the weekend with her. And I'd learned how to have a relationship with my mother that was not all about me. I realized that I had sucked the air out of every single room I had ever walked in because I'm so selfish and self-centered. It's just how I think. It's not that I'm a bad I'm an alcoholic. It tells me on page 62, selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our trouble. And I went, that's it. The good news, and that's bad news. The good news is if I can get out of the way and let a higher power run the show, I can lose my fear of yesterday, today, and tomorrow. I'll be reborn. And that's what happened. And my mother died in November of 2017, and I was there when she took her last breath. It was real quiet, took all night. God love her, she suffocated to death. So we morphined her out, and I sat with her and watched her. It was real quiet. And it was, there was no regret, and no, I wasn't sad. I actually got to share every bit of recovery I had with her every single day in those meetings, on that phone call, every single night. She knew as much about AA as I did. She was not an alcoholic. She was married to one. She bred them well. And very familiar with it. And I got all, my oldest sister, we had different mothers. My dad was married before. My oldest sister, though, is a 50-some years Al-Anon circuit speaker Nazi. And she had been in my mother's ear for years. Not just about me, but I was the star, remember. And so when I got sober, I realized my mother had all these AA books laying around, which she'd had for a while. I never noticed it. She had like a second or third edition. I came in on the fourth edition, by the way. And when I saw it, I said, Mom, can I have it? And she said, no, you'll have to wait till I die. Fine. And I did. And I got all her books. And she had a lot of Al-Anon. A lot of Al-Anon. So the ninth step stuff, it's cradle to grave. That's been my experience. It ain't over till it's over, till I'm gone or they're gone. Paying the money was the easy part. Damn it. I got a daughter that was absolutely, I have three sons and a daughter. And my youngest son and my youngest daughter, my only daughter, sorry. Most of their lives, I was a drunk. My two older ones, there's a 10-year gap. They saw me a lot of the years that I wasn't drinking. They saw it all, but they did remember me when I didn't. But my two younger ones, they mainly got me drunk. And they see me handcuffed. They've been brought home. They saw a lot. It wasn't pretty. But my daughter, she seemed okay. When I say okay, we, like mother and daughter, I don't know. We don't have a lot of women in here, but I've never met a woman that didn't have a mother issue at some point. And if they say they didn't, just stick around. But we were good. I mean, we talked all the time, whatever. A couple of years ago, she broke all ties with me. And I don't know why. I don't know why. She won't tell me. She won't talk to me to tell me. I don't say that to say, oh, that's so sad. What it gives me is a lot of opportunity to get out of the way again. That second part of step eight still lives and breathes for me. I'm not done. I'm just not. I have to remain willing and lean into my Creator. I can't force people to do what I want them to do. I'm still selfish and self-centered when I do that. These 12 steps have enabled me to walk life no matter what's going on. The last few years, and I'm going to wind down real quick. I can't tell what time it is. Okay. Step 11, which is like utopia for me these days. I can't get enough of it. The big book. And the 12 and 12. I like the 12 and 12. Check out the 12 and 12 too, Anya. You know, Bill, when he wrote the big books in 1939, those guys hadn't been sober 5 years, man. They're winging it. I gotta say it. It's either total divinity or they're winging it. The combination is what we have today. The 12 and 12 he had, it was written years later, and he's got some more time to think about this stuff. But step 11, which is where, like, the St. Francis prayer is, and these beautiful, beautiful things. And Bill talks about and writes about, you know, the libraries and places are treasure troves. And this, we're seekers. It's my job to seek and to grow myself spiritually. If I stay stuck, and I love the big book, I hope you have gathered that. But if I just stay there, I'm cutting myself short, because this creator that I'm coming to have a relationship with is much, much more than I could ever come up with. And I got to keep seeking this knowledge, this information to grow. And so the last few years have been mind-blowing for me. Through step 11, prayer, but meditation. Meditation. And the open-mindedness that it has helped me with. Because a lot of things I want to say, nope, that's a bunch of horse shit. You know, I don't want to hear about that. But everything helps me to grow. And it's my job to do it. The big book talks about saying, you know, you don't want to sit on your laurels. You have to keep growing. Because my alcoholism is still alive and well. Still alive and well. And this is the scary part about it. As bad as my alcoholic bottoms were, and I can't imagine that I would ever forget what that felt like, I have. I cannot feel right now what it felt like then. I can tell you the details. I can tell you it's bad. Time does heat, you know, does take stuff away. The only thing that keeps it real for me is coming to these meetings and helping other alcoholics. So step 11 keeps me free from my own bullshit. Gives me a way to, like, treat myself with peace and serenity, because I'm naturally wound tight. Just am. And so it helps me to breathe. So that when I move into step 12, which is trying to carry this message and practice these principles, all that back stuff that, you know, been going on, in all my affairs, 11 helps me to have something to give. And not be a tornado roaring through the lives of others anymore, which is what I'm real sucking the air out of every room I've ever walked in again. So tonight was, you know, just another day in the life of my sober life. My old life, I don't want back. When I got here, if you'd asked me what I wanted, and I would have passed a lie detector test, I told you I needed a man and more money. That's where I lacked. I knew I shouldn't drink. That was duh. But if I just had a man and more money, and I can tell you I would have sold myself short. Because those things come and they go. I mean, I have the greatest man on the planet today. We are getting ready to celebrate our one-year anniversary. I got married at 65. Who the hell does that? I mean, I'm just saying. And I married Santa Claus. Didn't see that one coming. Did not see that one coming. And I don't have my financial whatever, the math doesn't work. Nothing is mine. Everything is a gift from my higher power for me to use to be of service. If I take ownership of something, it's going to stress me out. Because then I got to control it again. If it's my house, watch out. If it's my car, I mean, it's not my money either. Because I don't do well with it. I just don't. So I really appreciate it. I hope somebody heard something. I can tell you, if you think you're an alcoholic, talk to another alcoholic. And do what we do. It's not a quick fix, but it's the only fix I found for what lives in my head, which is why I drank. Because managing this, that's why suicide became an option. And the 12 steps are where it's at. And I found them in the big book and with a sponsor. And for me, it took a butt-whooping that made me willing to do what I was told in all my affairs. So thank you, guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Grace.